Let me read for us then from Genesis chapter 11, verses 1 through to 9. Now, the whole earth had one language and the same words. And as people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly." And they had brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. And they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth." And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of man had built. And the Lord said, "Behold, they are one people, and they have all one language. And this is only the beginning of what they will do. And nothing that they purpose or propose to do will now be impossible for them. Come, let us go down there and confuse their language, so that they may not understand one another's speech." So the Lord dispersed them from there over the face of all the earth, and they left off the building of the city. Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. And from there the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. This is the word of the Lord. Throughout history, we know that humanity is capable of great things, especially when we harness the power of technology and social cooperation. One of the most spectacular examples of this in modern times is the envisioning and the building of the Burj Khalifa. It is a monumental skyscraper in Dubai, all done with the great harnessing of technology and social cooperation. Here's some statistics about this enormous tower at over 828 meters high. The tower holds the records for the following: tallest building in the world, tallest freestanding structure in the world, highest number of stories in the world, highest occupied floor in the world, highest outdoor observation deck in the world, elevator with the longest travel distance in the world, tallest service elevator in the world, and for fun, the total concrete used in the building of this structure apparently weighed as much as 100,000 elephants. No doubt this building was built to impress. When you go visit their website, it says officially of itself, it says that it is a living wonder, a stunning work of art, incomparable feat of engineering. When we sit back, we know that the building of something so grand in our day and age was made possible by the harnessing of two things: technology and social cooperation. The owners of the tower said it this way: "The Burj Khalifa goes beyond its imposing physical specifications. The project is a declaration of the Emirates' capabilities and of the resolve of its leaders and people to work hand in hand on truly awe-inspiring projects." Harnessing technology and social cooperation is not new. We do this throughout human history to build these big, imposing, testimonial structures, things that says something about us as human beings. It's a recurring impulse of humanity throughout the ages. In fact, if we read again just a short few verses from our passage this morning, you will read again about people who have done the very same thing in ancient days, where they harnessed technology and social cooperation to build their own testimonial structure. Verses 4 and 5 tells us that these people said, "Come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly." And they had brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. Now that is technology. Primitive, yes, but it is technology. And then they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves." That is social cooperation. A willingness to work together for a common cause. And by itself, it seems like an innocent enough venture, right? They're just building a city. Got a bit of a skyscraper going on there as well. And we might even go as far as to say it was commendable. You know, use the technology that you're able to dream up. Use the brain power God has given you. Use the skills and the creativity that God has given you. That, we might say, is a commendable thing. And neither can we fault social unity, right? That there was a city where people were quite willing to share a vision and work towards a common goal. That is a commendable thing. We don't fault that. So what's the problem with this story? Why is God so triggered in this? What is it that attracts God's disapproval in this story? Is it because they were technology, bent on technology? Is it because they cooperated and were socially unified? What's the problem in this story? The problem is not so much in the use of technology. The Bible is not a book that tells you that we should get rid of technology and should do no advancement and development in technology and instead favor a rudimentary Amish style of living. That is not what the Bible will tell you. Nor does the story take issue with social cooperation, as if working together is intrinsically bad. That is not the problem taking place at Babel. The issue in this story is all about intent. What is it? What is the reason or the purpose driving these people to build their city and to build their tower? It is all about intent and how that intent will determine how they use and harness technology and social cooperation. It is all about intent. And so what were the intentions of these Babylonian citizens, right? What was going on? What did they purpose to do? Their intentions are revealed in a few little words that read like this: "Let us make a name for ourselves." That is a statement of intent, right? Let us make a name for ourselves is an intention. A little while ago, a few weeks ago, maybe a couple of months by now, do you remember stories of Catalonia wanting to declare independence from Spain? You remember that story? A small region in Spain wanted to declare independence, wanted to do their own thing. So they had flags and banners of protests and said, "We want independence, give us our independence," and so on. What was going on with these tower builders when they were saying, "Let us make a name for ourselves"? They were effectively waving a flag, an independence flag, in the face of God. They were saying, "God, we want our independence from you. We don't want to be ruled by you. We don't want to be governed by you. We don't want to give any reference to you in our lives." And so these words are a bit of a protest flag. As the word of one commentator said this way, he says, "This protest at Babel was all about human independence and self-sufficiency apart from God." That's what was happening. By building this tower, the citizens were saying, "We want independence. We don't want you, God. We want our thing. We just want to do our thing. Don't come into our lives. Don't govern us. Don't rule us. Just let us do our own thing." By their assessment, they had the technology and they had the social fortitude to go it themselves, to craft a life without reference to God, without his help, to reach God. This is the interesting thing about the story. They thought that they could just reach God at will, right? At their will and at their choosing, by building this pointy thing up into the heavens. And then they can just access God when they want to, but they do not want the reverse. They will not let God access them at his choosing. People tell us there's this irony in the story, right? That they build this enormous tower up into the heavens to get to God. And then it says that God went down to see what they were doing. That's how tiny their efforts were. It's a bit of a polemic, is what we call that. They think they've done something great and God says, "Let me get out my magnifying glass to see what you're about." But so they want it, this tower to be. They wanted it to poke into the heavens, right? Like a ladder or a magic beanstalk that would just access God's place of residence. We moderns roll our eyes at that kind of thing, right? We roll our eyes at the idea that you can just build a structure tall enough, and once you pierce into the clouds, somehow you're going to find God there. We just don't conceive of heaven that way, right? So we just roll our eyes. The naivety of these ancient people, how stupid and foolish these people were. We scoff. We know, as modern people, that we have sent people into space, and still we have not found the doorway to heaven there. And when the Soviets sent up their cosmonaut, right, one of their statesmen said after he returned, he said, "Once they sent up this cosmonaut, we did not see God there." And so he just scoffs at this idea that you can just go up really high and find God. And we moderns, we just think these ancient people were a bunch of fools to think this way. Sure, I agree. We might have a different understanding of the metaphysical world. And that heaven is not so much a place up there, you know, hiding behind the clouds. And if we just build high enough, we'll get there. Yeah, we don't understand heaven that way, right? It's not just a place up there that you can access with your spaceship or your tall ladder. We understand it differently. But I ask you, that issue aside, aren't we driven by the same kind of impulses as the tower builders? Isn't our hearts functionally very much the same as the tower builders? Think about it. Have you ever desired or bought into the desire to downplay God's access to your life? Have you not bought into the desire, or ever had the desire, to proclaim some kind of independence from God? Say, I know exactly what you require of me, Lord, but I want to do this other thing. I want some independence from what you're asking of me." Are we not functionally the same as these people in Tower Building Babel? That we want to make a name for ourselves? Want to do our thing? I know I have. I suspect we all have. Let's make this a little less personal for a moment. When we think again about those behind the building of the Burj Khalifa, they did say quite explicitly that they wanted their work to be recognized and celebrated by others. They wanted it to be considered great. Remember, they said it is to be a declaration of the Emirate's capabilities and the resolve of its leaders to work hand in hand. A declaration. They say as much. It is a declaration of our name building, of the Emirate's name building. Look, all I'm asking of you this morning is, are we really that different? Or do we too desire to make a name for ourselves? I mean, that is the problem of Babel, right? The intention is to make a name for themselves. And I'm just suggesting to you this morning that we routinely plot to declare our talents with profound ingratitude towards God. That we, like the tower builders, want to have our name in the spotlight and not God's. We want to write headlines of our greatness, not God's. And this is the central issue and sin taking place in the building of the Tower of Babel. It's not that they used technology or that they had great social unity at that time. It's that they wanted to do their own thing. They wanted their own glory. They wanted to do something with their name emblazoned as a legacy for all the world to see, but not God. They did not want to make a name for God. They did not want him to be celebrated. And even today, I suspect that we too are not that different. But suppose we're just saying, look, what is wrong with that? I mean, what is so essentially wrong with doing a little bit of name building for ourselves? Why does God want this spotlight anyway? Like, hasn't he got enough spotlight? Why does he want more? Why does he always want this spotlight? I mean, if we behaved like that, that would be vanity, right? And yet the Bible routinely tells us that for God to seek his glory is not vanity. So what's wrong? What's wrong with making a bit of a name for ourselves? And why is it right that God would want the spotlight all the time? And my answer is this. We were made for so much more than to gaze into the mirror of our achievements. Let me say that again. We were made for so much more than to gaze into the mirror of our achievements. Let me explain what I mean by that. We all live for something that we love and prize most in the world. We all have an inner drive, right? Something we love, something that we prize, drives us. Gets us up in the morning, gets us to work, gets us back from work, all that sort of stuff. We are driven people. A singular affection drives us. But the Bible also tells us that unless God has begun this tremendous spiritual renewal in your life, what Jesus calls to be born again, unless God is doing the spiritual renewal in your life, the thing that you prize and love most is never God. Never. We will always choose something other than God to prize and love most outside of the spiritual renewal work that God does for us. But God has not created us to find our highest good, the thing that we prize or love most, to be outside of Himself, right? God didn't make us that way, to find fulfillment in things outside of Himself. Everything that you look for to find fulfillment in outside of God is just, it's like vapor, right? It's good for just a moment, but you can never quite sink your teeth into the thing. It always eludes you. It's what the Bible calls the fleeting pleasures of sin. It's not that it's not pleasurable, it's that it's fleeting. It never remains. The best sleep you have always gets interrupted by a good wake-up, doesn't it? The best chocolate, it doesn't last forever. The sweetest romantic evening that you spend with your wife or your date or whoever it is that you're going out with, it comes to an end. It just doesn't last. And so God says those things aren't meant to be your highest prize and your greatest love. They are meant to be enjoyed, yes, but not as your highest good. Not as your highest good. In fact, the Bible tells us that God says quite explicitly why He made us this way. He says, "Bring my sons and from afar, and my daughters from the ends of the earth, everyone who is called by my name, whom I created for my glory." Do not miss that. God created us for His glory. That's what we were made for. And that frees us from gazing into that mirror, that shallow mirror of our own achievements and accomplishments. I'm reminded of an older Christian, St. Augustine, an African bishop. He knew this truth very well. He misspent his youth on women and partying. But eventually he was converted. And when he reflected on his life of pursuing his highest prize and his greatest love in women and parties, he reflects on that and he says this. He says, "You, O Lord," it's a prayer. He says, "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it rests in you." He knew that all that gazing in his mirror of accomplishments, all his exploits as a young man, he knew, and he describes them as a restless heart who is looking for fulfillment, something substantial, which only God was able to provide. He counts all his exploits as that of a foolish, restless heart that would not find rest until it found it in God. Some of you may be helped by C.S. Lewis, who reflected on the same thing. And he says, when he reflected on the way we routinely choose something other than God to prize and to love, he says this. He says, when we choose and prize to love something other than God, we are half-hearted creatures fooling about with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea. That's what it's like when we're making a name for ourselves. We're just fooling about. Because we've never ever been able to contemplate or imagine what is offered by a greater pleasure that God sets before us. And God would spare you that kind of life. And He offers you a better one instead. That is why God could not let the tower builders at Babel continue on. Because they would be choosing a life of mud pies in the slum. When God is quite prepared to set before them a holiday at the sea. But in order for God to rescue us from that kind of life, of a name-making for ourselves kind of life, we have to become exposed to his gracious intervention. Right? His intervention is one of grace. Here, it's a rescuing intervention that takes place at Babel. But it is an intervention. It is a disruption, no doubt. At Babel, it meant that the human language became confused, right? People started speaking in different languages, and you can go nowhere in terms of social cooperation when you've got no idea what the other person is saying, right? You're not going to get far. And so to that end, God confuses and disrupts their language so that they can no longer go on this path of making a name for themselves. Two things I want you to note at this point. Firstly, this is the Bible's account of why there are so many different languages in the world. You may believe that or you may not believe that, but this is the Bible's account of why that is. Why there are so many language groups in the world. Secondly, this confusion of languages is a deliberate barrier that God put in place to restrain humanity's tendency to go and make a name for themselves rather than God. But it isn't a permanent barrier. This is good news. The language barrier isn't permanent. In the providence of God, the gospel community has begun to breach that barrier in order to make a name for God. Notice this, it is the gospel community that is breaching that to make a name for God. We are, as human beings, trying to overcome that human barrier. We've got our Google Translate, we've got our iTranslate, we've got that instant real-time stuff going on nowadays. But we are not trying to break that language barrier in order to make a name for God. We are still doing it in order to make a name for ourselves. And Jesus is saying, my community, my followers will breach that language barrier in order to make a name for God. It'll be quite a different community of people. So, if you consider what happened in the early church, in the book of Acts records the Christian community gathered on what we know as the day of Pentecost, right? When the Spirit was given. Why is that an important day? One of the reasons is because the language barrier came down that day. At Pentecost, God's Spirit enabled ordinary believers to transcend the language barrier by communicating the gospel in various languages. Let me read for you what happened that day. Acts chapter 2. And I'll just read a couple of verses for you. It goes like this. Now, they were dwelling in Jerusalem. There was dwelling in Jerusalem Jews, devout men from every nation under heaven. And at this sound, this is at Pentecost, the multitude came together and they were bewildered, because each one was hearing them, this is believers, speak in his own language. And they were amazed and astonished, saying, are not these, those who are speaking, Galileans? And how is it that we hear, each of us, in his own native language? Goes on to say that there were both Jews and proselytes, Cretans and Arabians, who were saying, we hear them telling in our own tongues the mighty works of God. Pentecost was a day of God undoing this language barrier that confused the nations who who were making a name for themselves. And God was signaling for us two things in this. The first is that when the gospel came in its fulfillment through Jesus Christ, that he is now creating and sustaining this gospel community that is reversing the dividing of tongues. The language barrier will not be forever. There will be a community of people with profound social unity that will make a name for God and not for themselves. And to them has been given the gift of overcoming the barrier. And secondly, it tells us that that gospel community, the reason they are not making a name for themselves, but making a name for God, is because their hearts have been changed. The very intentions that drive them, that gets them up in the morning, that's different. They're not setting off in their day to make a name for themselves. They are setting off in their day to make a name for God. So the gospel community are those whom have been gifted the overcoming of this language barrier, because our intentions have been renewed by the gospel. And that is what was lacking at Babel. There was no gospel renewed intentions in their heart. There was nothing at Babel that stopped them to ask, for what purpose are we harnessing technology and social cooperation? Is it to build a name for ourselves, or is it to create a society that will foster a deep acquaintance with God? They never stopped to ask the question, why? Why are we building this? Is it for God? Is it for ourselves? So here's the take-home lesson for us. Scripture is asking us, what kind of life are we committing ourselves to? Will we be like the tower builders, using good things like technology and social cooperation to make a name for ourselves? Or will we become the new gospel community, the new society of God's people, who will not only use technology and social unity, but will use it for their intended end, to make a name for God, to glorify him by calling upon him and serving him together? Isn't it interesting to consider that the gospel does aim to renew entire societies this way, to bring about new intentions for an entire people, where they may have a deep acquaintance with God, so much so that our intentions become Godward, desiring him and not ourselves.